Hello, everybody. Welcome into another episode of the Comics Experience Make Comics Podcast, the show where we talk about the nuts and bolts of making comics. And I'm Joey Groh. He's Andy Schmidt. And today we're talking about part three of our Making a Collaborative Deal That's Fair budget discussion. We did two budget discussions earlier, the last two episodes. Number one was setting personal budget for a project. Number two was create a budget. And this go-around is making a collaborative deal that's fair, which is certainly something that everyone doing any kind of comics should be cognizant of, but especially if you're doing creator-owned stuff and you're the person that's doing the outreach to get the ball rolling. Collaborative deal that's fair, Andy. I'm sure that's evolved a little bit over time with how different aspects of life have worked, not just the money in, but TV and film and video games, et cetera, but also digital for comics. So what is a collaborative deal that's fair in your estimation?
Well, I think the first thing to point out is that when we talk about a collaborative deal that is fair, we're talking about a collaborative deal that is fair, which is something that a lot of people don't think about a whole lot. And it's easy not to think about it in terms of that is fair. And there's other ways that we could couch this too, besides just fair. Like we could talk about it being treating collaborative partners with mutual respect or valuing their contributions and skills, however you want to kind of look at it, or their time. So what we're most people just talk about, like getting to the deal, like what's the best deal I can get for this thing. So the most common scenario that I see, given that I'm working with writers and artists, is usually it is a writer, you know, on a like a creator-owned project, usually it is a writer seeking an artist. That's usually how it goes, but it certainly can go the other way, and does. But it's really easy to forget the fair part. It's also really easy to overvalue your work when looking at the project as a whole. So I see that, I see both of those things a lot. But one of the reasons why it's so easy to forget about how important the fair part is because if you're seeking collaborators and you're planning to pay them, that budget gets really big, as we've discussed, very quickly. And so you're really focused on, I don't want to lose a ton of money on this thing. I need to keep the price as low as possible. Now, that's a basic business, you know, sort of a tenant, like keep your costs low. So again, makes perfect sense. But what I see is most projects that fall apart, which is a lot of them, fall apart at this stage. Now, they may not actually fall apart until, like, technically fall apart till later on. You could have an issue and a half done, and then work stops and there's a falling out, right? But the root of that fallout is usually right here. Not always, but very often it is. And it's because somebody on the creative team doesn't feel like they're being valued, right? Doesn't feel like their contributions are being valued. Doesn't, you know, it's more about feeling than anything else. And a lot of people really forget about the personalities involved when making a business deal. It's very easy to be like, well, it's this time, it's this money, it's, but, you know, it gets very like technical sort of, or cold, calculated, logical, whatever term you want to use. So the real goal is getting to a deal that's not always going to be the absolute best price you can get for something and as fast as you can possibly get it, but one that is one that everybody signs off on, maybe literally signs off on, and everybody feels good about it. And not just about themselves and what they're getting out of it, but the whole team is good. Like, this is a good setup for all of us. What that is, what that deal looks like, is going to be different for different collaborators. So, and you know, I don't know that I've ever seen the same deal, you know, exactly twice. There's usually something that gets shifted slightly or whatever. I mean, maybe if it's the same creative team doing multiple projects, they might just keep the same deal. But that's the thing, because what happens that I see is if somebody winds up sort of putting the screws to somebody a little bit, even unintentionally, and just saying, hey, I need you to do this for $10 less. What do you think, you know, per page? Well, that adds up over time. They're either not making enough money where they can keep doing it, or they wind up, you know, just feeling like, man, I shouldn't be doing this for this rate. And it festers over time. And eventually they, not knowing, not everybody's really good at confrontation and pulling things up. And so they wind up just kind of letting go of the project. And it doesn't happen. And so if you take a little, even a slightly longer view approach to your negotiation or conversations or however you want to think about it of coming up with that collaborative deal, if you just take a longer term approach to looking at it and going like, I want the deal that has the best that I can live with, you know, or be comfortable with, that has the best chance of success of actually producing a project at the end, that's different. That's a different deal than what's the absolute best deal I can get.
Right.
The other thing it does is if everybody feels good about working on the project and what they're getting out and they feel valued, they're going into it with more enthusiasm, like a lot more. And the work is probably also going to be better. So there's some intangible benefits to this as well. And that doesn't mean that, you know, it's not as simple as just like, well, I talked this guy into a, you know, a $10 per page rate. So I'm just going to add 10%. You know what? I'm going to give you $11. Like, it's not that simple. You got to feel it out, and it's difficult because you're talking about things that at least here in North America, a lot of times we're told you don't talk about money. You don't talk about those things, and you got to open up and be honest. And so that's sort of the end deal, you know, sort of the conceptual approach that I recommend to people towards getting to a deal. But prior to that, I think you've got to be open. You got to be honest. Like, if you're thinking about something where you're like, I wouldn't want that person to know X, then you have to question that, you know? Anyway, so as long as you're going in open and honest, and you should be able to read from other people, hopefully, if you feel they're being open and honest, then I think that's a good thing. If you're getting that gut feeling that, like, not sure I fully trust this person, or I really want this to work, but I have this feeling that it might not, you're probably better off going with your gut. I don't know of any case that I can think of where I went, you know, for a project that I was going to work on as a creator-owned project. I can't think of any case where my gut told me, yeah, you might want to rethink this, that worked out when I didn't rethink it.
Much like a lot of life.
Right, yeah.
But that is a good point that you get into, is likely this is not necessarily a scenario where people are going to maybe be involving a lawyer. You're maybe using it as a boilerplate template that you found online, or it's something that you discussed and modified, or just states very clearly what you're going for as far as an arrangement. Obviously, you've done contracts for your business, for yourself, for companies that you've been involved with. You've had to sign different things, non-disclosures, here's what we're doing, lots of different stuff. With a collaborative deal that's fair, is there any kind of baseline place you might suggest people start with as far as either here's some basic information to think about, or here's a place you could go as a resource and look at this? And I know Joe Sergey has done a number of different talks with you and on his own about the law side of making comics, which you know, is an aspect of this, is the legality of, hey, we created Captain Cucumber, and then 5 years later there's a Captain Cucumber movie, and I really thought I should have 50% of the market, you know, or for 50% of the rights. Those are not everyday scenarios, but going into any kind of relationship that's a creative business relationship, good thing to have discussed.
Yeah, well, you never know what's going to catch on and take off. I mean, there's no predicting that. I mean, the biggest, most successful entertainment companies in the world will put millions of dollars into something, and then it just doesn't connect, you know, because they just think, oh yeah, it's gonna happen, and then it just doesn't. I mean, we can all think of those like giant blockbuster bust movies, you know, things like Waterworld and, you know, whatever else. And actually, what we're seeing in the box office this year is we're even seeing that some tried and true, you know, franchise, you know, properties are just coming out and people aren't coming out to see the fifth installment of whatever. So there's just no predicting that. So it's important to protect yourself as best you can. You know, I'm not a lawyer, can't give legal advice, but if I were giving legal advice, it would be if you can afford a lawyer or know one who's willing to help you out, talk to them. That would be my advice. So, you're kind of talking about two things. The first is there a baseline for an agreement? And the second is, you know, how do you go about kind of trying to piece together an actual agreement? And a couple of things you can do to minimize your expense is the more that you know about how contracts work and the more you know about how the legal system works, the less time your lawyer should have to spend working on the contract. And if you're paying your lawyer by the hour, they tend to charge a lot by the hour. Like, you could cut the time they spend in half if you go in with maybe not like a legalese draft, but like a bullet pointed thing of like, these are the deal points that I want. Here's what needs to happen here. And these are the things. Like, if you just kind of go in with like a tight outline that you've researched and you know, well, that's going to cut down on the time they're going to spend. So it's going to save you money that, you know, because you just didn't spend it on the lawyer.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. And just the more you know, the better you know how to protect yourself. Every industry is different and has different standards. So publishing is different from movies, which is different than merchandising and licensing and all that sort of stuff. So you mentioned Joe Sergi and his talks. He's got a book out as well, and he teaches the Comic Book Law for Creators class for Comics Experience, which is coming up in a couple of months.
Nice.
And is open for enrollment now, I believe. I think we actually just opened it up last week or 2 weeks ago. And that's a really great class because it's specifically for creators, mainly comic book creators. I think he does get into a little bit, you know, some of the other entertainment stuff because you can't really separate all that anymore. But it's focused on contract law for creators, and I don't know where else you go to get that perspective on
right.
it. So it does cover like, what do you look for in the contracts? You know, how do you protect yourself? And what this thing looks like, it means one thing, but it actually means this other thing over here. You know, I know I've gotten hit in contracts with stuff like that where I read it and I'm like, well, that's plain as can be. And then it turns out that it's an industry standard that those three words together don't mean exactly what you think they would. They actually mean something a little bit different.
Right.
So that's frustrating. So there are some resources. There are some, I'm sure, other books about contracts and stuff out there. Very few people enjoy reading those, but they're, you know, take a look. I mean, hopefully they're helpful. I don't read most of them because I don't want to. I want to sit down and just read law books. But then as far as a baseline, you know, I mean, I kind of start with okay, if I'm going into business for a project with certain people, I build a spreadsheet and go, okay, well, let's say I'm going to be the writer and there's going to be one artist doing pencils and inks, but we're going to have a separate colorist most likely. We're going to have, and so I take basically those positions and like those jobs, and I throw in like marketing and you know, business dealings and, you know, all that sort of stuff on this spreadsheet, and then sort of assign, you know, who's doing what. And so at first my name is a writer, but by the end of that thing, usually I'm also under editor. I'm also under, you know, the person seeking a publisher and doing all that legwork. I'm also under, you know, marketing, or me and somebody else are under marketing. So I wind up looking at that and going like, okay, yeah, the artist is going to spend more time drawing than I'm going to spend writing. But when I add all this other stuff in, it starts to look fairly equal, you
right.
know? And so that's how I kind of form my baseline, is I sort of throw like percentages right under each one. Like,
well, yeah,
you know, for that, that's going to be worth 10%. And, you know, the letterer is not going to get the same cut as the writer and the artist. It's just the reality of things. But, you know, so I sort of start from there. But then you get into things too, like, you know, maybe you're just doing a collaborative deal between you and one other person. Like, it's the writer artist team that actually own it. Everybody else gets paid work for hire. Well, then who's paying that, and how do they get reimbursed, and if they get reimbursed? So it these things get really complicated really fast, which is part of the reason why people do need lawyers.
Right.
It's you know, lawyers serve a lot of different functions in these parts, and you know, but a lot of people don't do this without lawyers. I don't know how protected they are, but and no contract is perfect. There's always going to be some level of ambiguity. There's always going to be some question. Somebody can, you know, there's going to be some scenario that you didn't think of. So yeah, it gets crazy fast. But going back to the core tenet, I tend to start with all things being equal, everybody splits the pie equally. And then once you start looking at how much time, how much work, how much effort, who's got name cachet, who's doing what, you know, all this, you know, who's bringing what to the table, then those percentages start to shift up and down sort of from there.
And typically, that's how I get it. Yeah, I guess my default thinking in a lot of this, though, is it's a contract between a writer and artist. It sounds like you are also, maybe not every time, but making concessions for letterer, colorist, and editor might also have some amount of whatever they're getting. And maybe you mean it as simple as, hey, we're going to pay our colorist X amount per page, and if they turn things in early, they get a bonus or something.
Yeah, I don't tend to do on-time bonuses and stuff like that.
Sure.
For a couple of reasons. One is, the simpler I can get a contract, the better. Like, I will almost always go for simpler rather than, like even if I could make more money with a more complicated contract.
Right.
And everybody would feel great about the whole contract, I don't go that route. Like, just because I don't want to spend that extra 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour, whatever it might take to track all that. And the thing is it doesn't sound like it's going to take you that long, but if you're the one doing the accounting, you're going to forget, and you're going to pull up that contract, and you're going to have to look for it and be like, what does it say exactly? How does this work? Okay, let me put that into a spreadsheet and recalculate this, and it just takes a long time. So but that's for my own sanity. I tend to want to keep things simple like that.
Sure.
So, but yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I start from. But then pretty quickly I would go, well, okay, I could either, you know, maybe letter this myself, or I could, you know, I could pay for the lettering outright so that, you know, like do a work for hire contract with the letterer, and they're fine with that. And,
right.
And they feel valued under that, and I can do that. But then as soon as you do that, and okay, that's going to be owned by us. But okay, now where's that money come from? Okay, that money comes from me, not my co-owner on this. So then how do I get reimbursed for that? How does that work? You know, or, you know, and then basically what I tend to do is sort of go, okay, let's say the letterer was going to get 5% of ownership, and then I go, okay, well, I'm basically buying that 5%.
Right.
So then that 5% goes over to me. You know, if I'm at the writer, maybe as a writer, I start at like 15% or 20%, whatever it might be. And then I get bumped up because I'm the one paying for that. So, but that's not, I mean, you know, that's honestly a very complicated way to do it. Like, I'm making this sound more complicated than it has to be. It is a complicated process, but it doesn't have to be this complicated. You know, this is something that this particular thing that we're discussing right now, I actually don't use very often. I have used it in specific cases, but, and it was something that really came out of me just toying with this idea that like if nobody was getting paid anything, what makes sense of who owns how much? If you have to spread that 100% out over everybody, and including editors and marketing and whoever else in it, then that, you know, that was how I sort of came up with that. But it's not, honestly, it's too cumbersome a system for me to use. What it really helped me do was figure out that on my projects, I probably don't want to go into a project where we're splitting it that many different ways. So I don't do projects if I can't afford, or my collaborators and I can't afford to pay parts of it work for hire, so that we don't have to do all that accounting, because that accounting of that would just kill me.
Right, right.
And I don't think I've ever been a part of a project where I didn't default become the accountant, which stinks. I hate being the accountant. But I now know how to do it, and so
you can get it done.
yeah, I can do it, get it done, and people trust me to do it, so I wind up being the one to do it.
There you go. Well, I think that makes sense. So if you are seeking a creative collaboration with Andy, you know his roles. We'll also include accountant. I think that's a good kind of wrap up overall for a collaborative deal that's fair. It's a lot of having a conversation early on with somebody and making sure that everybody, like you said, is being as upfront as they can. And if you do feel like you don't understand a part of it, or maybe it's unfair to you, to have that discussion, which is not always easy for people to do with a stranger, but it's something that I would highly encourage you to, to really, really do your homework and due diligence if you're getting into bed with somebody for a 5-issue miniseries on something, because that's a big chunk of time and it's a big commitment. So making sure that you're at least happy with the deal, that should be a minimum of what you go in with as far as your creative collaboration. We were recording this a little ahead of San Diego Comic-Con. We were releasing this the week of San Diego Comic-Con 2017. You are going to San Diego Comic-Con.
I am.
And
this is true.
Comics Experience has multiple panels. I understand that all of them, you're going to reveal a different secret about Stranger Things Season 2. So in addition to all the people that want to make comics, you should have all those Stranger Things fans.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's what it's all about. We have 5 panels that I'm leading. The first is on Thursday at 4:00 in room 11. That's Breaking Into Comics, How to Break Into the Industry and Stay in It. And we've got some awesome guests, including Dark Horse's editor-in-chief Dave Marshall, writer Erica Schultz, and Marvel talent manager Ricky Purden are going to be on there with me.
That's a great lineup.
Thanks, Joey.
It is a great lineup. It's exciting.
Yeah, no,
it's a good.
They're all very, very good people with very different perspectives on that. So yeah, and they're all nice and open, which is nice.
And you guys should all follow them on Twitter too. They're all open and approachable and easygoing people, and give a lot of good information.
Yeah, absolutely. On Friday, we've got 2 panels. The first at 3:00. The second at 7:00 p.m. They're in room 11 and room 2, respectively. Maker of Worlds, the art of writing and the art and writing, I should say, of world building, which is actually a based on a course that Robert Atkins and I are offering. We're co-teaching it. We've never co-taught before, so this is pretty exciting for us. And that starts on August 3rd, which I remember because it's my birthday.
Happy birthday.
And thanks, man. So that one's starting on August 3rd, and you can sign up for it now. But that's going to be a super cool class, because what we did was we actually built a world, and we recorded all of our conversations, much like this, but with video. And like we pull the art up on screen, and we talked about the art and like what about making these changes. And so as part of the course, you'll get access to these videos almost as if you're going through the process of building this world.
Very fun.
With us. And we're having, obviously the course time, and you're going to be developing your own world with it. So very, very, very cool class. We're super excited about that. So that class starts August 3rd, but the panel on that topic, obviously we can't do the whole class because we only have an hour, but it's myself and artist Riley Brown, who's probably best known for Deadpool, and is part of the Creators Workshop with us. And then that night at 7 p.m. in room 2, Visual Storytelling and Comics Art Fundamentals, which Riley is on, and so is Ricky Purden, the Marvel talent manager who reviews all the art.
Fantastic. Then,
these are really – I'm really excited about these because these are good ones. And then on Saturday, I've got my last 2 panels, and they're back-to-back in room 11, 6:00 and 7:00 at night. They are – and I apologize in advance for this title – Bam Spiff, Writing for Comics. with Fred Van Lente and Erica Schultz. Fred Van Lente, Archer and Armstrong, Incredible Hercules writer, and Erica Schultz again, and that's in room 11. And then Creating Your Own Destiny, the New Comics Career, which is something I've been really kind of talking about a lot lately, especially in the workshop, but at a lot of panels and discussions about what this new comics career is, because the comics industry landscape has really shifted a lot in the last decade, to the point where the previous comics career doesn't always hold up anymore. And so what I've done is I've recognized different trends, and I've recognized different approaches, and categorized how this new what is this sort of new comics career path that exists that nobody else seems to be talking about, but I'm convinced is real because I keep seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that one's actually just me. I mean, that's really going to be me talking about all this stuff about the industry, about how to manage your career and, you know, how to play smarter, not always harder. Nice. So that's everything going on at San Diego with me, that, and, you know, walking around looking at cool monsters and stuff, whatever I can find on the show floor. The world building class starts on August 3rd. So I really, really hope that people sign up for it because Robert and I put a ton into it. And so I hope it's a relatively well-attended class. And of course, there's always the live workshops, the Creators Workshop, which is the online 24/7 message boards where we talk about everything to do with making comics. Comics professionals are involved. Fred Van Lente is involved. Riley Brown's involved. Robert Atkins. You know, so lots of cool people and intelligent people that are open to sharing and talking about things. And then we are actually, this is cool. I guess I'm announcing this. I didn't realize I was announcing this, but as of August, we are going to 2 live workshops a month, at least for a while. We're going to try it out for several months. We have traditionally only done 1 live online where you're seeing me and whoever else and discussing on drilling down on a particular topic. But in August, we're going to start doing 2 a month. One that is the Creators Workshop, the way that it's been done, where it's usually very craft-based and it's me or another professional talking about something craft-based. So that one will be Tuesday, August 8th. And that one's on breaking the grid, comic page design that breaks out of traditional grid-like patterns.
Mm.
But then the second one each month is going to be a little bit different. It's not just going to be yet another. So in August, we're doing a book club, Nothing Lasts Forever, with guest Senna Grace. And, you know, I think we're doing we're doing others. They're not always going to be book clubs, but that one's going to be a book club. And
nice.
That'll be great. So, yeah, so there's a lot of exciting stuff going on. Certainly, I feel very busy. But... yeah, and there's more to come. There's more stuff coming down the pipe.
Excellent. So come see you, San Diego Comic-Con. If you're listening the week we recorded this week, talk to Andy, bug him, see what he can tell you about Paul Reiser's character in Stranger Things Season 2, and go check out comicsexperience.com to see what's coming up with the workshop and in general.
I'm pretty sure at some point Paul Reiser is going to say, "It was a bad call, Ripley. It was a bad call."
I would have gone the other way and gone mad about you. That's usually my Paul Reiser go-to.
Yeah, but Aliens was in the 80s.
Yeah, but mad about you feels more non sequitur when you're trying to make him be that same character, but in a contemporary... Let's go diner. Let's just split the difference, and it's Paul Reiser diner.
Fair enough.
Which is 80s. It satisfies non sequitur. I think it brings it all home. Well, if you have a question on a topic you'd like to hear discussed on the show, you can email info@comicsexperience.com. You can also tweet @comicexperience on Twitter, and one of the staff will probably engage you in conversation and also get that to the show. So we'll talk about it here. Until next time, enjoy San Diego Comic-Con. Good walking shoes. Stay hydrated. Take breaks. Make comics.